Nice to have Ken Burns back with us on Sports Byline, the award-winning filmmaker, director, and historian. And, of course, it was back – how many years ago was it that you came out with baseball? Was that back in 1994?
It was 94. The last bit of action we described was the 92 World Series, and boy, has the game changed.
Yeah, and he has a sequel coming out called Baseball, the 10th Inning. What was the motivation for doing this, just to update the original?
Well, no, I think it was just how consequential these last two decades in baseball has been, and all the rule changes, interleague play, the wild card, but then, of course, the devastating strike and its unintended positive consequences, and, of course, the specter of steroids, all overshadowed by the great resiliency of the game and how many spectacular stories happened. We couldn't not come back and update it.
Ken, I know when you did the work on the first one, the baseball documentary, you had a chance to take a look at baseball over a long period of time. Now, when you take a look at the period of time from when you came out with this documentary to now, how would you, I guess, characterize it? Has the change and all the things that you just talked about been the greatest period of change and flux in baseball?
It has been the greatest period of change and flux. I mean, you have to look back to the 40s when African Americans were finally and belatedly let in to play the national game and so completely began to dominate that that's an important thing. But when you think about the rule changes, you think about the way in which the explosion of money and salaries, all the new ballparks, the strike and the steroid scandal, in addition to the great play, let's not forget that most of this 10th inning is about, you know, spectacular players and teams like the Braves with Glavin and Maddox and Smoltz and Joe Torre taming the Bronx Zoo and the rise of Latin players at 9/11 and the way baseball helped the country come back, the Giants and Barry Bonds and that long and difficult tenure, the Red Sox losing so spectacularly yet again in 2003, but right back there in 2004 with the greatest comeback in our sports history. This has been just chock-a-block. We actually thought that this would be a two-hour program as our other decade-long episodes were, but this is, two hours that'll be broadcast on PBS the 28th and 29th of this month.
You said we didn't want to do a sequel. We wanted something that would stand on its own and be a testament. What is the testament?
Well, I think it's in the end, it's to the resilience of the game. You know, so many of us, myself included, were so spectacularly devastated by the extent of the steroid scandal. And yet, if you look back in perspective, the 50 home run season is back to being a rarity again, thank the Lord. And there were no more 300 hitters, the real arbiter of baseball excellence. No pitcher won 40 games. Nobody had a 56-game hitting streak, as Joe DiMaggio did in 41. Nobody hit 406 the way Ted Williams did also back in 41. So some of the most cherished records of the game remain intact, and it just seems to have extended some pitchers' careers and inflated some single season and thereby, by extension, lifetime home run records. And now we're looking at a fresh bunch of kids. Baseball's gone from having the worst testing program in professional sports to having the best. And, the fix isn't in when Manny Ramirez loses a third of his season last year for testing positive. They're going after everybody.
You know, you have a good perspective on this next question, and that is, having done the original baseball documentary and now the sequel to it, the 10th inning, when you look at the problems that the sport has had over its entire length of being around, have they been self-induced? I mean, have they shot themselves in the foot every time there's been a problem?
Well, you know, yes and no. I mean, if you look back over the years, the baseball has precisely mirrored our larger society. Look, you know, we live in an age when we give our kids, pills to do better in school. We take something to sleep at night and then take something else to wake up in the morning. We take pills to do better in the bedroom, you know, and suddenly we're shocked when our players are taking performance-enhancing drugs. We have to look at ourselves in the mirror first and realize the way in which baseball mirrors who we are. At the same time, we are our own worst enemies, and it's equally true of baseball. So as you chart the whole history of the game, in our first episode, way back in the 1850s, a guy named Pete O'Brien said, you know, they don't play baseball the way they used to when I was a kid. That meant that he was worried that they began to play people under the table, and that maybe that was going to corrupt the game. Well, that didn't do it, nor did alcohol, nor did a gambling scandal, nor did the exclusion of African Americans, nor did greenies and other amphetamines, nor did cocaine and marijuana in the 80s, nor did the free agency and expanding stuff, not the strike, not steroids. And if you look at the play on the field, between the chalk lines, this is the greatest time in the history of the game. It's never more popular, never more fans coming out to the park, watching it on all sorts of platforms, fantasy baseball exploding across the country. And the quality of play that you see in the highlights is as good as any other time. So I think that we have to look at the bad, but we also have to realize the extraordinary resilience of the game.
One of the things that I have found, Ken, having done this job and been in sports for such a long time, I think that bothered me is that everybody in baseball was culpable in this situation. I'll tell you a story. I was down at spring training in Arizona, and I was with a friend of mine, Major League Baseball player. We're in the swimming pool, and I said to him, I said, and this was in the at the heart of the cheating scandal, I said, what the hell is going on? He said, Ron, I'm going to tell you this story. He said, I had my ball club come to me and said, we want you to put on 30 pounds between now, the end of the season, and spring training. And you know what? There was only one way to do it.
Yep. Everybody was culpable, and then in the middle of the home run chase in 98, when Steve Wilstein of AP discovered Andro in Mark McGwire's open locker, he wasn't snooping around, we should have known better, but instead we went, we want, you know, more home runs, and so the press vilified Wilstein, their own colleague, and we just blithely went on asking every morning, did Sammy hit one, did Mark hit one, and think about what would have happened if we nipped it in the bud right then. Then maybe Barry Bonds might not have drunk the Kool-Aid at the end of that season when his much greater accomplishments of hitting 400 home runs and stealing his 400th base had happened and was relegated to the back of the sports pages when these clearly pumped-up sluggers were stealing the front pages of the real newspaper. I mean, it was one of those tragedies of epic proportion that swept everybody in its wake. And just because, you know, the Mitchell Report names people and somebody's leaking irresponsibly the names of those who tested positive in 2001 when it wasn't illegal and they were just trying to determine the extent of the testing, it could be 1,000 players took. We don't know. And when some of our favorite players go into the Hall of Fame and we go, thank God they weren't juicing the way Barry or Roger or Mark or Sammy was, we actually don't know, and they may have been.
Ken Burns is with us, the award-winning filmmaker. We're talking about the sequel to his documentary, Baseball. It's called Baseball, the 10th Inning. One of the things that you do is that you talk about the rising influence of Asian and Latino players. Is this coming at the expense of African-American players? Joe Morgan and I had a conversation about the fact that in the World Series a couple of years ago between the Houston Astros and the Chicago White Sox, the Astros did not have a black player in that ball game on their roster. So, again, I ask you, is the influence of the Asian and Latino players, is that coming at the expense of the black players?
No, not at all. I think what's happened has been some economic things. It's cheaper to develop those Latino players. It's not easier and cheaper to cultivate the Asian players. But it is certainly the Latino players, and there, as Ian is right, there's a certain amount of exploitation that when, you know, an Asian player comes equipped with a translator and these poor kids come from the Dominican or Panama or Nicaragua or wherever they're from, and they're dumped into the American system and hardly even speak a word of English. That's another more complicated story. No, I think a lot of this is positive. African Americans dominated this game for so many years. Their percentage have actually gone up in the last a couple of years. It's nowhere near their percentage in the population, but there are other opportunities have opened up for African Americans, and they completely dominate the National Football League and their total domination of the NBA. And so what you're talking about is just opportunities, and what we said in the original series and this is that baseball reflects society and the waves of immigration. First, you know, the English who invented this game, and then the Irish who became the next great wave of stars, and then Germans and Central and Southern Europeans and belatedly African Americans, and now as our own demographics change from people coming from the Latin countries and from Asia, so too is our national pastime reflecting it, and there's been an outward push on the part of baseball to welcome this globalization, to reach out and spread the gospel of, let's face it, in my opinion, the greatest game that's ever been invented. I mean, I'm a great fan of football. I'm a great fan of basketball, but it doesn't come close to this game. The only team sport without a clock, the only team sport in which the defense has the ball all the time, the only team sport in which the man scores, not the ball, the only team sport in which each field is different from the next, the only team sport with different sized foul territories and stuff can happen in foul territories, a game in which your best player can only come up to bat once every nine times at bat. It means you can't inbound to Michael Jordan every time you're behind to hit the three-pointer at the buzzer or have Joe Montana throw to Jerry Rice. You might have, your whole season might depend on a middle infielder just called up from AAA. And this game teaches you about loss. If you fail seven times out of ten, an unacceptable performance in any other sport, you're a 300 hitter. You do that for 15 years, 20 years, you're in the Hall of Fame. This is just beyond the best sport. And what we try to do is celebrate that, but also look at it with straight, unflinching eyes at the things in which baseball's done wrong, and the scandals, the strike, the money issues, and say, this is also reflective of our larger American character.
Certainly baseball has been associated with the hero image over the years, and yet I think that most fans have a searing image of Mark McGwire before Congress saying what he said. And then there's the Barry Bonds situation, there's Palmeiro, there's others along the way. What has that done to that image of baseball players being heroes? And when you think about some of the players that have been replaced, their records replaced, like Hank Aaron, your thoughts on what that does to the whole image of baseball and the hero aspect of it?
Well, I think there's a positive aspect, is that when we make these perfect characters, and we live in a media age where everything is scrutinized and we discover everything about them, but when they lose their mythic qualities, as this great sports writer Tom Boswell says in our film, they actually gain some humanity, which is a good thing. If we just don't say, throw the bums out, or he's okay, he's my Barry Bonds, or he's the worst person ever, you know, he doesn't have the fraction of the talent of a Willie Mays, we're making a mistake, and we need to see these people as complex human beings. We extend that to our family members and to our close friends and other people. We know we need to take off this mythology of heroism, because these are not heroes. There's nothing intrinsically valuable. The baseball historian John Thorne says in our film, to be able to hit a piece of cowhide coming at you at 100 miles an hour with a piece of turned northern ash, there's no intrinsic value to that. So we make our sports heroes something that they're actually already not. You know, maybe your mother's the hero. Maybe, you know, Abraham Lincoln's the hero. Maybe the president's the hero. You know, the people around you who are doing extraordinary things and bearing unbelievable burdens. And that's what we need to focus on. And I like the fact that we sort of, the mantle of stardom has been taken away, and the game hasn't gotten any less interesting. Think there are more people watching the game, attending the games, spending money on the games, following it, doing fantasy leagues than at any time in the game's history. It must be doing something right, and it has to do, of course, to those intrinsic appeal of the games that I just described, what makes it so unique, but also I think in the way that we finally learned how to compartmentalize. Yes, it's sorry that Barry passed Hank Aaron, because Hank Aaron seems purer than Barry. But, you know, baseball, despite the records being important, we always have to tell stories about it. I mean, if you look up 1919, it says that the Cincinnati Red Stockings won the series. It doesn't say asterisk. The White Sox, forever now known as the Black Sox, took money from gamblers. We have to tell stories. And that's what we're going to have to do about the steroids era. And at some point, there's going to be somebody that breaks the record, and we're going to feel confident that this is great and pure, and we'll feel good about it. But no one will ever forget what Henry Aaron did. No one will never ever forget the good sportsmanship he showed in the midst of Barry Bonds passing him. No one will ever forget what it was like to have that generations of kind of consistency on his part, and the burden as a black man in America passing Babe Ruth. Remember, he was receiving 3,000 pieces of hate mail a day. Hate mail. He had to leave under guard from the stadiums as he was approaching breaking Ruth's record. Now, that's heroism.
We got about 30 seconds left. What do you want viewers and fans to take away from this?
I want them to take away that this is the most beautiful and glorious game we've ever invented. I want them to take away a sense of the game's resilience and to understand that though we have been unflinching in looking at these difficult chapters of the devastating strike of 1994 and the prolonged steroid scandal, that the game has survived and in many ways it's stronger than ever before, and that we can arm you with the complexity and the nuance and the undertow to understand the steroid scandal and to even come to terms with complex figures like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, Mark McGuire, and Sammy Sosa at the heart of that scandal, and still have your faith in this beautiful game remain intact.
Ken, I want to thank you very much. I urge people to check it out, Baseball, the 10th Inning on PBS. Take care, Ken.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Ken Burns, the award-winning filmmaker. We continue with Sports Byline.